whoever watches this or listens to this that is a fan of Ghost, thank you, because you are really the reason that we're still going. We're not getting a lot of love from awards or, you know, the quote unquote cool kids in Hollywood that sit at the high table. So you guys, the fans, are really keeping us in business and engaged, and it's, we are super, super grateful. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Screen Crush Crossover Universe podcast. I am a lucky guy. I get to be here with my co-host, Heather Antos.
And I'm a lucky gal to get to be here with my co-host, Ryan Airy. Ryan, how the heck are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Heather. You know, we're coming up on Comic-Con. I'm pretty excited.
We are.
And yeah, I'm going to be there for a show. We're doing the last Screen Crush show of the tour, where we get to resolve everything we've been doing and we're changing it up. We change every show, but we got some new stuff. There's a comedy sketch we came up with about James Gunn. I'm pretty excited for people to see. So
is James Gunn showing up at this one?
He is. At every show, we have a dream sequence where somebody shows up dressed as James Gunn so I can pitch them my DCU project I would like to do. And we came up with something different, because this is great because the whole staff, or at least most of the staff, can actually be there. Whereas, you know, on the tour, they can only fly two of us out. So you had to just listen to me and Colton, but people get to actually meet everybody. And we also got a special super duper secret thing going on that I'm pretty excited about.
That's exciting.
I can't really talk about though. And, you know, I moved, I unpacked, I have a yard. Huh? Doug smells like a yard all the time now. You know, that's always fun. What's new with you?
Comic-Con. I mean, preparing for New York Comic-Con, we're about to announce some very exciting things, some very spooky, exciting things that I'm really excited about for the show. And just all things horror, all things comics, Star Trek, The Last Starship number one just came out. Twilight Zone number one just came out.
Very exciting. Yeah.
A lot of comic things happening in my world.
And I don't want this to seem like I'm just trying to plug stuff up here at the top. I'm genuinely interested in how you're doing and sharing how I'm doing. It's just so much of my life is work, you know?
Yep.
My family's about to visit. I have not seen my family since last November.
Oh, wow.
So. I know. I'm pretty homesick, so I'm glad to be getting a visit. And we're going to go to Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's
fun.
Which
I've never been to.
You've never been? Oh, it's so much fun.
It's a weird place to deem fun. I'm curious what people mean by that.
It's super fun. Are you a museum person at all? Do you like museums?
I am. I love going to historical places. Like when we were touring, when I went to Dallas, I went to just to see where JFK was shot, but then there's a museum. I love a museum, man. I really do.
So they have a nautical museum that is super great. Tyler and I spent 6 hours there. It's really, really cool, marine history, ship history, you know, all of that stuff, right? But then they have the Hawthorne House, Nathaniel Hawthorne's house. It's where he lived. It's, you know, it's the house that the House of Seven Gables was based on.
Yeah.
That was the coolest tour I've ever been on. Ever in my life. I highly recommend it.
Okay. The Marine Tour. Got it. Yeah. Salem, Massachusetts. Okay,
and
great.
The Hawthorne House. Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Now that I know you're going, I'm going to send you all sorts of recommendations because I love. There's a cool restaurant called The Ledger that's in an old bank. There's a cool bank vault.
All right.
Yeah. It's super fun.
Well, I know my mom, my sister, and all my nieces, at least most of them, are coming up. And so we need all the recommendations we can get.
Yeah, no, I got you. I got you covered there. I love Salem. Good times. So, but I could talk about Salem all day long, but should we introduce our guest? Should we get into...
Or we could talk about our favorite spots around Massachusetts. I'm good either way. But yeah, I think we probably should. He's been very patient and waiting. So tell us who we have on today.
I am so excited for our guest today. You've seen him in movies like Pitch Perfect and Free Guy, the TV show Ghosts, the TV show The Dropout. He's been on Broadway. He's writing comic books now. It's my dear friend, Utkarsh Ambudkar.
There he is.
Oh my gosh, that was, sorry, I just had to wait for so long.
Well, I hope that the intro was worth it.
Have you been to Salem, Massachusetts?
No, I'm not. I know, but now I'm going to go, guys, after that glowing review.
We're going to go this weekend. You want to come?
I would love to. Let's do it. Massachusetts to LA. It's like a 45-minute drive. We're good.
Easy. Done.
Easy. Easy peasy.
Guys, it's not new rock stars. It's not what culture. It's mother effing screen crush.
What culture? Wow. I have not heard a what culture reference in a while.
Eat your heart out, Ellie.
They making good YouTube videos over there? I used to go on that site every day.
Yeah, I do it because, like, if I'm, like, doing some background work, there's always a list I can go to. Whereas if I'm watching your videos or, like, a new rock stars, probably, it requires a certain level of focus. And to be fair, I am drawn into it. You and Doug are one of my favorite duos to watch.
Oh, my God. Okay. Thank you.
100%. You guys, like, first of all, we have generations here. I'm a huge fan of you guys at Screen Crush. I pretty much watch everything you put out. Congrats on the last leg of your tour, by the way.
Thank you.
And Heather's book is like required reading in our home. My oldest still reads it, and we're just sort of passing it down from the 10-year-old to the 5-year-old to the 2-year-old.
I love it.
We're in it. We are inundated with both of you guys.
So, I mean, you're a proclaimed nerd, Utkarsh. Like, you like comics. Yeah,
I like everything.
You like all the things. Yeah. What are you watching right now? Like, are you playing any video games, movies, TV shows? What's your binge?
Gaming, I'm sort of like off the radar right now. I was playing with my buddy Chris from Freestyle Love Supreme. Are the only way that we 40-year-olds can meet each other these days is to play Fortnite together.
Yep.
It's been a while since I played with him. And then in terms of watching, we're shooting season 5 of Ghosts right now. So the schedule has been such that when I get home, putting anything on is kind of difficult. But I do have the last episode of Alien Earth waiting for me to watch.
Oh, good show.
I like how it extends the mythology and it's been diving in. I haven't watched any spoiler related content about all you guys. You've got theories. I know you got theories. I've seen them pop up. But
our theories for that show were okay. I don't think that's a show that was like hanging on to big reveals, you know, like, is so and so a robot? An alien, that's about all you can do. So we did a few of those, but not, I think really what we enjoyed about that show was the symbolism, you know, diving into like the dramaturgy of Peter Pan and stuff like that. Like that's where it like really sank for me.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. That's what I've been into. And then movie wise, what did I just watch? I mean, I've pretty much just seen everything that you guys have seen. I saw Weapons. I'm waiting to see the Allison.
Haven't seen Weapons.
You haven't seen it?
No. I also need to go see One Battle After Another. I'm so excited. We've just been so busy lately.
I think I have tickets to see it this weekend. Yeah, I'm really excited.
I'm jealous.
And then what have I been reading in terms of comic books? Nice House on the Lake or Nice House by the Sea, both of those. I just picked up, oh my gosh, what did I read? I read all of them and I've completely forgotten. There was like Daredevil Born Again or something.
Yeah.
Steve McMahon did a 3-issue Daredevil run. I read that. There's a new horror book called Hyde Street.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
I started reading Hyde Street. And then that's about it. That's about what I've had time for.
Well, I read this new book called The Guy in the Chair.
Yeah, dude.
Fantastic. Great book.
I hear that issue drops October 8th, just around the corner.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
Straight to the plug.
Fans of the pod. Fans of Doug. Yeah, Hannah Rose May, who I know you've worked with many times, Heather. Hannah Rose May is a phenomenal, I mean, she's just a nuclear human being. She's incredible. She's currently basking in the success of Exorcism at 1600 Penn.
Yeah.
Before that, she put out a book called Rogue's Gallery, which also was a huge hit. And she's written like Harley Quinn and Star Trek. So she's just somebody that I've glommed onto. And I'm so lucky to be able to work with her. We met at Comic-Con a couple years ago. And she walked up to me and was like, hey, I'm going to be on Ghosts on Monday. And I was like, no way.
I remember this because I was with her right before.
Yeah.
We were talking about, we were talking about 1600, actually. We were talking about Exorcism 1600, and we were in the same, I think it was the Hilton, where all like the press and everything was going on during Comic-Con. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I think I just saw Utkarsh. I'm going to run over and say hi real quick.
It was really cool. And then I was like, what are you doing here? She pulled out this comic book. And I'm like, this can't be. It cannot be this easy universe. And I think she thought I was full of shit. I think she just thought I was being polite, getting an autograph copy. And then I saw her on Monday and I was like, no, I'm a fiend for this. I go to Captain Quebec in Montreal on Wednesdays. I get all my books. I showed her my stack of comic books.
Yeah.
And from there, we just got to chatting and she came up with this idea of what is it like? You know, it's similar in ways to Free Guy in the sense of like, what is it like when a marginalized character who's not equipped to be at the center of the action is thrust into it? And we came up with this idea of Abi, who's this computer analyst who works in conjunction with assassins. He's their guy in the chair, like Ned in Spider-Man. And he's in love with Merlin, who's his partner.
Yep.
The thing is their company has said it's against the law for you guys to ever meet. Punishable by who knows, something like that.
Right.
And one day Merlin shows up at Abi's home, battered, bloody, and bruised, begging him for help, saying that she's been framed. And these two have to go on the run. There's a 4-issue adventure. That's our first installment.
Yep.
And can Abi go from being the guy in the chair to the guy? Will he tell Merlin how he feels about her? Will they be able to conquer the obstacles in front of them? There's a big old baddie called the White Knight, and save the day. Find out.
Now you just sound like the narrator at the end of the Woody cliffhangers in Toy Story 2.
Yeah. Will they survive? Yeah. Johnny Quest. I was going for Hanna-Barbera.
Johnny Quest is perfect. Yeah. Or the Venture Brothers. They did a couple episodes of that. Anyways, so I read the first issue yesterday, and man, that's great. And what I really loved about it was how we've seen this guy. We've seen this scenario. You know, he's in Mission Impossible. He's all over the place in these movies, but then we just go see what he does after work, you know, where he goes out with his friends. He drinks a little bit too much. He is such a relatable. He's like the most relatable protagonist I've seen in an action story like this. You just immediately pulled me in with, you know, his cute little crush on her and stuff like that. It's fantastic.
It's so, I think one of my favorite moments, is just when he's out at nightlife and there's the girl in the car and she's like, I have a boyfriend. And Abhi is just like, that's cool.
But then he's nice and they hang out and they dance and he talks about his crush and they still have a pleasant evening. That's awesome.
We really are leaning into our strengths here. Hannah is such a great storyteller. She's the master of the page turn, the cliffhanger. She knows how to pace action really well. And what I'm here to do is sort of bring the funny. It's a really, hopefully a really funny book. It's a comedy first, I think then a romantic story followed by a spy-fi action thriller. And I think we found, you'll see from issue to issue, each issue sort of takes on a different genre in that way.
Cool.
And hopefully you're laughing the whole time and really enjoying seeing Abhi like just being way over his head with the biggest crush he's ever had, just trying to be cool while getting shot at. It's been a blast.
It's tonally, it's like a blend of, what is it? It's Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And then what was that Jack Quaid movie that just came out? Novocaine. Yeah. It's like a good, you know, blend of those two.
So we're really excited. It comes out October 8th. And, you know, I hope you get your copy because I'm going to be buying every single one. So good luck trying to get one of mine.
You've gotten this taste of, I mean, you did a Marvel's, a comic for Marvel, a short for Marvel.
Yeah, thanks to you.
Yeah.
Thanks to you and James Monroe Iglehart.
Of
That was us,
right?
Yeah.
Didn't we do a podcast during the pandemic?
Yes, we
and
did.
That put me in touch with Marvel. And then I ended up doing, a 10-page Iron Man story in their Marvel Voices book a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Look at us, man.
Well, I was going to say, is your thirst for comics, is it satisfied? Are you hoping to do more down the line? Are you just saying goodbye, Hollywood? Hello, comics.
I mean, if comics paid like Hollywood, hell yeah, that would be incredible.
I wish, man.
But just speaking from a sterile perspective, just business, like we're in an IP-driven industry, and I have the opportunity with comic books to create IP that I love and that I feel really proud of that represents a culture, ethnicity, face, people that you don't get because, you know, the X-Men were written in the 50s and there are no Indians on the X-Men.
Nope.
Like, as much as I'm pushing to be Nightcrawler, like, he's German. But, you know, I could be blue with a German accent. Ben Kingsley did it with an Indian accent. Fisher Stevens did it.
Yeah, I was about to drop Fisher Stevens and I was like, I didn't bring that up.
Oh.
Sure you can. We can repay the favor.
Do you remember the episode of Master of None where Aziz Ansari's character hears for the first time that Fisher Stevens was not Indian? And the audience was also like, he wasn't? Like, I was blown away by that. Because I only saw that movie when I was a kid, you know? Oh, how far we've come.
So funny, yeah. But so with comic books, like you, and also like I am the guy who's been going on Wednesdays to the comic book shop for almost 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I took a little break during adolescence because I was afraid of getting made fun of. And then I hopped back in around 19 or 20 and I've been on it ever since. So to pick up a book, to flip through the pages, all the sensory stuff, to smell the pages, to bag it, board it, to look at the ads, what movies are coming out. Like you can pick up a book from 91 and it'll be like Battletoads is on the cover. Like I love the time capsule feel of a comic book. So, you know, Hannah and I are cooking up new stuff, Heather, as you know, which we can't talk about yet.
Not yet.
What was your gateway into the geek comic book world? I love knowing like what people's early draws were.
Yeah.
So we're talking like young, right? So 4 years old.
Even if it was like, you know, the first time you saw Star Wars
It was, you know, you'd go to the, the convenience store and they had the racks that spun.
Yeah, the spinner racks,
You could get two or three like comics for maybe $1.99 or $2.99. And it was the Larry Hama G.I. Joe run from Marvel. That really got me into it because I was a G.I. Joe toy fiend as a child. So the Larry Hama G.I. Joe toy run. And then my family, extended family, all lives in India. And you would go to the library there, lending library, and they had tons of comic books that were sort of extremely dated for that time. But they were all the 70s. Comics of Superman, Green Lantern, all the DC heroes. Very few Marvel books, but a lot of DC and then a lot of like Archie comics, Richie Rich. So I read a lot of those. And then as I got older, for most of us, the big gateway into like, oh, I love this was Spawn.
There you go.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like Spawn, Death of Superman. Like I was a kid, right? So I'm following whatever trends everybody else.
All the big stuff. Yeah.
All I know is the event stuff. So, and then I sort of kept at it. And after a while, I grew a little bit fatigued with the superhero stuff. Around the seventh event, like after when Civil War II came around, I was like, I think I need to switch up the flow.
Every year, it seemed like there was another thing that you had to read it, and that got old.
Yeah.
So that's when I started getting into like Ex Machina, like Why the Last Man, The Exterminators, Preacher, books like that. What is it? The Cleaning Room, The Clean Room. Ice Cream Man. Like that's when I started reading Southern Bastards or something.
Yeah.
All those.
It's funny. The Clean Room is one of my favorite comics of all time. I actually have the original cover art over there on my wall by Jenny Frazan.
It's love
one of my favorites. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it given your career trajectory, it's got to be quite fascinating, you know, growing up in a time when like comics weren't necessarily cool and it wasn't necessarily cool to like superheroes or any of this stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're a working actor and the MCU is the biggest thing, you know, to it. It dominates Hollywood. You know, have you been vying for your MCU debut? Do you have like a dream character?
Well, I think I have to look at it correctly for casting. Like the way that the public just pounces on casting choices that aren't true to the book.
Unfortunately.
Sure.
Extremely difficult for me to like realistically play anyone. I mean, I think there's one or two X-Men characters that are like fringe characters that were Indian.
Mm-hmm.
There's some blue dude with a gem in his head. I can't remember if it was like Rama or something like that. But I mean, ideally, I would want to play like Nightcrawler or a Speedball.
Well, create your own X-Men.
I think at the early days of casting of these movies, and you're right, there is pushback on things. And there's always going to be a certain element on the internet that pushes back on stuff. But I think for a lot of people, it was like for the first incarnation, they wanted to see it adapted like it was in the comics, right? Whether that's good or bad.
True.
I think now, hell, we're going to get into like the fourth version of the X-Men on screen, third, depending on the iteration. I think now they'd be a lot more open to just colorblind casting whoever's perfect for the role. So if that's the case, is Nightcrawler still your answer?
It would be like Nightcrawler, or like the only one that I pushed for where I was like, please get me an audition. And then you see that it was Moon Knight. It was for Mark Spector.
You would have been great. And there's no reason you couldn't play Mark Spector.
It would have been a more...
Yeah.
It would have been funnier, but Mark Spector has that sort of schizophrenia kind of vibe where you're like, what is wrong with this dude?
And the character still could have been Jewish because there are large sects of Indian Jews too. Not for nothing.
Hey, you said it, not me.
I made a documentary about it. I know what I'm talking about.
And then also it's like my own like wishful thinking. Like there's stuff has come up for like S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And I'm like, I don't want to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Well, because then you don't want to get locked in, right? You don't want to get locked into like, now I'm stuck as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent for the next, you know, for all canon.
Jessica Henwick basically did the opposite. She said, no, I just want to play Colleen. Like, please, like she said, I'm going to hold out to play Colleen more.
Please don't make me a superhero.
Well, I think she would rather Colleen become Iron Fist, but she really loves that character and didn't want to get cast in any other MCU stuff.
Well,
oh man, Iron Fist would be so cool.
You'd be a dope Iron Fist.
Yeah, the street level characters, Iron Fist, Moon Knight, like Speedball, Nightcrawler, sort of like those, again, guys on the fringe.
A little more gritty, yeah.
You keep bringing up Speedball. I always thought of Speedball as just that guy from the New Warriors. Are you like a massive Speedball fan? And by the way, we're talking about the superhero and not any kind of narcotic, just so people know what you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, John Belushi. I like, if you saw the Civil War run, he became this character called Penance, right? He's sort of the reason that all like the Marvel, the MCU became what it was for about 10 years. And so that character being this sort of television personality who was this goofy sort of weirdo with like kind of a lot like the guy from Suicide Squad that David plays, who like throws those colored balls and blows people up, like very weird character, but all of a sudden becomes sort of the inciting incident that wrecks the entire MCU. And what that does to him afterwards was always really interesting to me. Like a really, really, really funny guy who becomes a tragic figure.
He is like the Gavrilo Princepe of, you're right, it all started with Civil War and then just kept going. Like, they were on a hell of a run for events there for a while. They really were.
They did really good. I think they were good up until like Civil War II. Or...
Civil War II, that was my first... Oh, no. That was right before I joined in, because my first Marvel event was Secret Wars 2.
Oh, yeah, that also, which wasn't bad. I love the Lord.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. No, that was, but there was a period, because before I was professionally working in comics, I was just a fan with my Wednesday polls, like, you know, every single one of us, but I didn't the only Marvel comic I really read at that time was Deadpool. That was really the only one.
Yeah, you're a fiend. I know. You're a big Deadpool fan.
And I was mostly a DC girly at the time. And so I think it was Original Sin. I think it was the Original Sin of it.
Good comic.
I'm reading Deadpool. Yep. And then all of a sudden, like, Deadpool doesn't want to do violence in this comic. And Deadpool doesn't. I was so confused. I was so confused because I just did not pay attention to the rest of the canon.
Yeah, Original Sin was like Nick Fury, LMD model. He gets killed, and then it's like a Watcher's big into it, right?
Yeah, it's a big Watcher's thing.
It was the Watcher.
The best part of that was the Jason. It tied in really well with the Jason Aaron Thor line because,
Well, Jason Aaron did Original Sin, like that was that was his event. So
that makes sense. And early in the run, he meets Gore the God Butcher, and Gore hates all gods, etc. And then Fury's able to like completely incapacitate Thor and make him unworthy by whispering something in his ear. Which is, you know, really hard. Like, oh my God, what did he whisper? What did he whisper? And it's, you know, you're building that up, but what he whispered was perfect, and it was Gore was right.
Yep.
And it's just what we didn't get in the movie at all. That kind of writing, it's so good. Yeah, those events definitely have their moments, that's for sure. And I think when the movies are able to replicate that feeling of like, oh, it's coming together, it doesn't feel forced, that's when, man, it's really fun to be into the MCU or DCU at that point.
I want to pivot for a little bit, too.
Because
you also, we have a little bit of Screen Crush connection happening here, because you also appeared in a show with a former guest of ours, Paul Sung Hung Lee, Avatar.
Oh, right.
Yeah, where you were King Boomy.
Yeah.
So that was, you were old King Boomy, which that must have been an experience getting to do all the prosthetics. I remember seeing you post on your Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, that was really cool. They reached out with an offer. And I haven't watched Avatar. Like, I missed the Nickelodeon.
Oh, the show. You didn't watch the... Yeah,
I missed the TV show. I was so too good. Old. I was doing other things. Although I've gotten back into it with my son, Boomy, whose name is Boomy.
Oh my gosh. Was that, like, just random?
Random. Totally random. You were like, there's this character. And I was like, I think I'm going to have to do it.
What does your son think of it? Does he know?
He's Aang. He doesn't give a shit about Boomy. like shake his head into an arrow so he could be Aang for his
Did that's cool. That's so cool.
He is Aang. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
I am not that old guy. That is not me. So that was a trip. That was season one of Ghost was ending. I was in Montreal and I had like 3 or 4 weeks to go from like donuts at Crafty to King Boomy.
Yeah,
and it was grueling. Yeah. So they gave me a trainer. He put me on a strict diet, and a regimen. And in 3 or 4 weeks, like, I mean, I wish I had had 6 months because God knows what I could have done. But in 3 or 4 weeks, there was like almost a complete body transformation from like ice cream cone to something with shape. And then I would show up at 3:30 in the morning, or maybe 3, it would be me and the VFX department and the hair and makeup, just us. There'd be like 8 people in the whole camp. And from 3 to, I want to say 10, that first day, 3:30 to like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, at least 9:30 or 10, I was in hair and makeup.
Did you fall asleep in the chair?
I think they were having a great time.
Okay, that's good. They were like
really cool people. They were all so funny and fun to be around. And we were just chatting and getting to know each other. And there's no sleep, by the way, because they're just shellacking shit on you.
Well, all over. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so uncomfortable and stinky. And it all smells like alcohol and weird chemical stuff. And then they had to paint it, right? So then they do the makeup. Then they're doing like, so it was a long process.
Did you have body prosthetics too? Or was it?
No body
prosthetics. No, it was just all facial.
But they painted my body like old man speckles, liver spots and stuff. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Then it took a while to get into that costume, which was a pretty ornate setup. And then we hit it, man. Yeah. Like the trainers, the fight choreographers, Gordon, who plays Aang, he's such a sweet, like, I mean, he's a man now, but like he was such a young, just dynamo.
Yeah.
So fun, so funny, so game for anything. Really generous and and just so kind. So that whole set was amazing. And then to see the finished product was pretty cool. Right now, we're just hoping schedules line up so that I can jump into that White Lotus bit at the end.
Yeah.
That is sort of why I signed up. I just want to be in that white robe kicking ass with everybody.
That would be cool.
The order or whatever they're called. But remains to be seen, Netflix. Yeah. What are we doing?
Netflix is all over the place right now.
Come on, guys.
I know.
Well, it takes so long to turn those shows around that have like a higher production value like that. Like the kid's going to age out of Aang. They're all going to age out.
The cast of the live action Avatar is just stacked. Like there's just so many huge, huge, like I was just refreshing and reading the cast list again today. Daniel Day Kim, Amber Midthunder, like just everyone in it that I can only imagine trying to get schedules to align.
I know. Look at me being like, come on, guys. I'm number 84 on the call sheet. Let's do this. We shot season 2 sometime earlier this year. Now we're just hoping that the scheduling works out for season 3. Great. Yeah. Incredible experience.
That's awesome. Where was that shot? Where did they shoot?
We shot it in Vancouver.
In Vancouver.
And season 1 was in like on the Mandalorian type of stage. Ooh. Like everything was in
the
like,
volume. Yeah.
Yeah, volume. Season 2 was back to practical. And I got to say, practical is way, way easier to work with.
I was going
to
say, you actually have an environment to interact with. Yeah.
What's it like shooting on the volume?
You are basically, the camera's looking at what looks like a real picture. You're looking at something where your perspective is totally warped.
Oh, yeah.
The depth, the shape of things, it's all like the pictures don't line up.
Yeah, because the camera moves with you and it's synced up to the movement, right? So it's like a game engine, right?
Right. So if I look behind me, I'm seeing like disorienting. Like when we were fighting, you had to stay sort of in your mode.
Bubble, yeah.
Because if I looked to my right or left, I would immediately become disoriented.
Can I ask this about the volume I'm curious about? So I've heard from actors before that the best days they had on set, like Coen Brothers sets, are when the director or directors know exactly what they want. When like that, you don't have to worry about having time or the director being indecisive on the volume because it's so regimented and planned. Do the shoots go faster?
No.
Oh, that's a shame to hear. Okay.
No, not at all. The setup takes forever.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, it depends, but also like I was doing like big scenes and a huge fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like that fight scene was super involved. I think it takes time to set up lights, camera, action anywhere you go. To get it right, the setup and preparation has to be involved. Now, in terms of the creative, I think we had everything planned out to a T.
Right.
So there wasn't any like on set, like, well, maybe he would. That we rehearsed, we were like good. So maybe
it's good.
In that regard, it moved faster. I've certainly been on sets that where you just sit on a chair and wait for people to talk it out.
I was going to ask, too, like, with the volume, because...
Guys, we got to get Ryan a chiropractor or an acupuncturist.
Yeah, sorry. I twinged my shoulder doing yard work because I have a yard. Oh, did I mention I have a yard? I have a yard.
Sorry. No, I can smell it through the computer, man. It smells good.
I was going to ask with the volume, because it, like, moves with the camera, right? How the camera is moving, then that probably eliminates the ability to have two cameras going at once, too, doesn't it? Or it makes it much more difficult to get like pickup shots while that's happening.
Yeah, I think you need to account for everything. Things need to be reprogrammed. You have to set it up and stuff like that.
Yeah. So in a way like that could slow it down.
Right. And I think that's why we switched to practical for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it just was with a show that big.
The sets are huge. Yeah.
Yeah. The cast and everyone involved and how intricate it is. You're like, maybe we should just build houses. Yeah.
People have been making films like this for 100 years. We could try that.
Yeah.
Speaking of shooting in houses, you're also on the show called Ghosts.
Great show.
Yeah.
Ghosts is kicking ass. Ghosts is, we're shooting season 5 now. We just completed episode 8.
That's crazy.
I'm heading back to Montreal to start the tried and true double Christmas episode.
Yep.
I don't know what's happening in it, but something awesome. I would assume... someone or something is getting possessed.
Typically.
That's usually what happens, or someone else gets sucked off, or, you know.
They get what?
Sucked off.
I haven't seen this show in a while. I got to get caught up on it.
Yeah,
amazing.
They either get They either
on
get
network
sucked
TV.
Off or they get get gone down
yeah,
on.
They get gone down on.
Oh, okay.
Or you get sucked off.
Great. Yeah, great.
Okay. Context matters.
Network
right?
TV's desperate
context
for ratings then.
Context matters.
I get it.
Let's not give them any. Gross has been this dream. It's just like this. I could have never imagined that we'd be filling up a hall at Comic-Con where, you know, I asked a question because I'm always a bit of a skeptic. We were there at Comic-Con this year, and I mean, it was a packed hall. I don't know how many people fit in those thousands. Yeah. And, you know, I was like, they must be waiting. I bet somebody's
it's for someone
like,
else. Yeah.
Yeah. Benicio del Toro or Matt Damon is coming on after. This can't be for us. And I asked, I said, does anyone in this room actually watch Ghosts? And every single hand went up. And it was, I mean, that is a really cool feeling. So whoever watches this or listens to this that is a fan of Ghosts, thank you, because you are really the reason that we're still going. We're not getting a lot of love from awards or, you know, the quote unquote cool kids in Hollywood that sit at the high table. So you guys, the fans, are really keeping us in business and engaged, and it's we are super, super grateful. Thank you.
It's such a bright spot, honestly, in entertainment. It's, you know, one of my, like, it's a great 30-minute sitcom. It's very rare you get 30-minute shows these days. Usually everything is an hour commitment, and it's so wholesome. Like, the whole cast, they're such, like, a great community, like, and we all feel it, you know, as fans from the screen. And I think you guys also, you're renewed for a sixth season as well.
Yeah, I don't know that I have no idea what that means in terms of guaranteed work. They might just be like, this thing might come out on the 16th of October and everyone's like, nah.
Well,
but like,
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I also love that it's
always
a network sitcom, man. I miss network sitcoms. I love that it, you know, it doesn't get the ratings it would have gotten in the 70s when that's the only thing people have. But for a network sitcom, it's getting like huge numbers. And I don't know. It's just great, good old fashioned TV, but it's hilarious.
A lot of people can watch it together, which is amazing. That's what I hear a lot.
Watch people get sucked off with your family.
It's truly wholesome entertainment. No, and I have to, like, you know, commend you, Akarsh, because like your role in that show is not an easy role to do, to carry with like the level of authenticity and charm that you do, because you're the guy who doesn't know what's going on at all times.
Yeah.
To play that off in a way where it's believable and doesn't come across as like hokey 5 years running is like quite a feat. That's really impressive.
Thanks.
You guys do such a great job with that show. And every time I watch it, I always like imagine just how fun those sets must be.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of things that we do that never make it to screen, probably a good thing, but we have a lot of fun. It's one of, I don't know, from day one, the 10 of us or 11 of us who show up, including our amazing guest stars, John Hartman and Poonam Patel and, you know, Matt Walsh and folks who have spent real time with us, we really get along. Mm-hmm. We do Thanksgivings together and we do dinners and lunches at people's houses. And this is after spending 14 hours a day with each other during the week. So something magical happened with these personalities and these creative minds. And our crew in Montreal is just, they're kind, loving, generous people who all want to see you succeed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get a chance to direct this season and episode.
Congratulations.
I have, I did my director, my DGA course. It was very cool. There were some very fancy people in the course with me. I was excited. I know that the crew and the cast will support me, and it's going to be really exciting.
Well, you're a fancy person too. Don't come down to
this. No, man, there's some fancy pants where you're like, you're in here? I don't know if I'm old. I mean, Felicia Rashad was in my class.
Whoa.
That's cool.
It was amazing. She's a freaking legend. After the lunch break, God bless her, she fell asleep right there on the Zoom. And I was like, man, you're a queen. You can do. And then she would wake up and just say one thing and we'd all go, So that was very fun. I'm looking forward to that. It's another great season for those who are fans of Ghosts. We got a lot of the things that make the show so well loved. And then plot-wise, some new things that I wish I could share with you, but I can't wait for you to see.
I can't wait after, you know, last season ended. Spoilers, Ryan. But last season ended with Sam's the book party and all the chaos. That the fact that the book plot line has, like, just kind of taken on a life of its own is kind of one of my favorite things with that show, because it was just kind of like an offhand thing that came about very early on and is now, you know, like a main tether to the storyline.
It plays a large role this season as well, in a really entertaining way. Now, here's a question for you, Heather, and Ryan also, being the you know, aficionado that you are. What happens if Jay becomes a ghost?
What do you mean? What happens? Like,
what does it do to the viewers if I go from your window into what's happening to, let's say, I don't know, fall off a roof, become a ghost, and live in the house? Are you there for it, or is it a Glenn moment for you, and you just stop watching?
A Glenn moment? I've not heard. Is that the new Jump the Shark? I like that.
I think for me, it would have to be that and, right? It would have to be that and someone else needs to fulfill that role in some way, shape, or form. Or that and maybe Sam suddenly loses her ability to, you know, that would be very sad. But like, and then someone else is able to interact with the ghost. I don't know. But if Jay is suddenly a ghost and is suddenly interacting with all of these people, and that's a consistent, and she can see them all, then it's not really like there's ghosts, except when there's physical limitations to what can go on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you heard it here first, baby. We're not doing it. I have no control over these things.
Do you want to become a ghost? I think it would be a fun...
No. Like... People have floated it. I just don't know what it does. I mean, in a vacuum of the show,
I feel like that's a spinoff, right? Like, that's a spinoff show. Not necessarily that I would want that spinoff show, because I think the show is perfect as it is. But I feel like that's like, if Ghost ended and he needed Ghost 2.0, then... You know what I mean?
I just don't know what the audience does if everyone's a ghost and Sam's the only living. Then you sort of lose that everyman feel that Jay brings.
Yeah. I read this book about the Spider-Man musical, and Bono says something really it's written by the writer, the musical. It's a great book. And Bono says this thing, it's like, when the idea is good, there's never any disagreement. So I would think just like look at, it would just all depends on whether or not it services the characters. Like what you're talking about seems like the kind of game changer. Have you guys seen Parks and Rec? It would be like when April married Andy and they completely got rid of the will they, won't they, and it just made sense. But at that point, of course, they're much better together than they were with this push-pull apart. Yeah. So that's my answer. It always goes down to like, not how the audience will respond, but what feels true for the character. And as soon as you start making decisions like, well, maybe we should do this to subvert expectations, you know, that always smells like a Glenn Mullman or a Jump the Shark where you've run out of ideas. Not saying they have. I don't.
You're like, I'll watch that shit.
I'm not saying I know they've run out of ideas.
It's always my story feedback I give when people are the, wouldn't it be cool if? And it's like, sure, it would be cool if X, Y, and Z, but we have to make it make sense.
Yeah.
And then it has to continue on for another season.
Yeah. I was at the first preview of that Spider-Man musical in New York.
Were you?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I think at intermission... I had to leave because there's like a opening scene or something where like a spider lady is just hanging.
Yeah, Arachne. Yeah
Arachne.
Oh, Arcane. My gosh.
Yeah, Arachne.
He was hanging for like 90 minutes, dude.
Yeah. You have to read this book. It's amazing. It's written by Glenn Berger.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm out. I can't sit here and watch this poor woman hang here for the whole evening. Like, they couldn't get her down. It was so weird.
I didn't realize the musical made money, too. Wild. It wasn't actually a flop, which is insane, because their whole plan was to like port it over to Vegas and stuff later on. But for anybody, especially who works with IP, where you get a bunch of different disparate voices.
Right.
It's just an incredible insight. And he does not pull any. He calls himself out for all of his mistakes. And it's a great book. Glenn Berger, if you're watching, thanks for that book. It's great.
Oh, yeah, Glenn. We honor you, Glenn.
Oh, my goodness.
What is it they say in the... We will wait for you, Glenn.
Yeah, we're waiting, Glenn. We're still waiting. Where are you? Bro?
We will wait for you by leaving you. That's what that means.
We are coming up on the hour, and I know you have to get out of here, Utkarsh. But before we do, we have a final segment that we do here called Hear Me Out, where we do our
Hear Me Out
nerdy hot take of the week.
Boy.
Ryan and I will each give one. You, of course, are allowed to participate if you have one.
Yep.
Ryan, do you have one ready? Are you ready to go?
I do.
All right.
I do.
Let's hear it.
I've been thinking of a lot of this kind of stuff lately for a little side project. Okay. We do these videos on Screen Crush, like so-and-so villain was right. And I got one for you. Sid from Toy Story was right. Now, this is not the hottest take. It's been on the internet for a while. Sid did not know he was torturing toys. He was a creative kid who liked to mix and match his toy. I did the same thing. He had no idea they were sentient. Woody scares the living shit out of him and traumatizes this child. He was blameless in the situation, by the way. And Sid, it's pretty clear, grew up poor. His parents weren't around. He needed an outlet for creativity. It's not like he was a serial killer or killing pets. He was messing with his own toys, right? He was mean to his sister, but a lot of older brothers are. In Toy Story 3, you see Sid working as a garbage man, or at least you see a guy like with a Sid shirt on. And then tragically, Coco, which takes place basically at the same time as Toy Story 3, shows a guy in the land of the dead wearing Sid's shirt, which leads me to believe that Woody traumatized Sid so much and he never had the means because of his economic situation to process that trauma that Sid died of an overdose at a young age.
Damn.
Woody's evil.
Woody is evil. Toys are the root of all evil. Oh, man.
That's tough. That's a hard pill to swallow.
It is, especially for, well, not for Sid.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. That's pills. Yeah, pills will get you.
Yeah.
You need pills, that don't take count, man. That's why doctor prescribed.
No, I mean, I was specifically thinking it was a pill overdose. But anyways, that's my dark ass theory on Hear Me Out.
Very upsetting.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry to ruin everyone's day.
I got to go back to Coco and look at that. I didn't know.
It's a little background thing. They don't confirm that it's Sid. Yeah. He's a skeleton, but come on. If Pixar is putting a guy in a skeleton shirt that looks exactly like Sid's in a movie, it's
yikes. Oh my gosh.
It makes sense.
There you go.
So anyways, speaking of childhood tragedies, Heather, do you hear me?
I do. It's nowhere near as serious as that one. But you know, I've been
yeah, lighten it up.
I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and just like the modern state of comics, and there's been a lot of not controversy, but just like a lot of debate over Peter Parker and where his current trajectory is in comics for the last, I don't know, 10 years or so now.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, I think that's because, you know, even though Marvel Comics has been around for 80 years or so in the Marvel universe, technically only I think like 15 years, 12 years, something like that has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But we have who started as like a 15-year-old, you know, Spider-Man hero is now in his 30s, and those stories aren't quite resonating the same way as they used to. So all of that to say, I think Miles Morales is a much stronger Spider-Man than Peter Parker is these days. I think his story is better reflective of the struggles of their modern era. He's much more relatable to current readers. And I think if you talked to folks 30 and under, Miles Morales is their Spider-Man over Peter Parker, hands down.
His movies are better.
Yeah, way better.
Yeah.
Which isn't fair really to compare, because you've got like, those movies take several years to make. I love it. I don't know much about what Miles is doing right now in the
Neither
comics.
Do I.
Is he still in high school?
I haven't read the recent stuff. There was a period where they were trying to make him like a spy. I don't know if that ever actually happened.
Well, he can turn invisible.
Yeah.
I think they did come out. I think it was like Spider, S-P-Y-D-E-R.
Okay.
That's silly.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
Well, he exists sort of because of that reason, right? They were like, we can't, our Spider-Man is aged out. What do we do?
It was.
No, not in the Ultimate Universe. That's not why. Because he was still a teenager when he died.
That's true. Oh, that run is so good.
It's so good, man.
I mean, the big thing for Bendis was he wanted to create a character specifically that his kids, you know, he had mixed kids that they could look up and embody. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he did it. It's
cool. That's been a big big motivation for him specifically with Miles and
guy in the chair, baby.
Well, Krish, do you have any hot takes?
I mean, it's not a hot take so much as just, I think, a given, which is, look, the reason that I'm even in film and TV is not, is a very strange reason maybe for other people, but it is my favorite actor of all time. He goes by the name of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Okay.
I'm not even joking.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I want to see where this is going.
Every single one of his movies as a kid, I dreamed that he and I would be in like an action sidekicks type of movie together. And I think he's gotten the short end of the stick right now, or straw, whatever that word is, short straw. I think if you gave Jean-Claude Van Damme like the Duffer Brothers or the Russos, or gave him a chance with the Softies, and gave him a chance to be in a movie like that, he could bring in, he could regain his blockbuster status overnight. Because I think he's got the chops.
I think he's primed for it.
He's the guy.
Is he still doing stuff? Is he still?
That hurts to hear. One can only hope. Yeah. I think he's got a couple movies coming out. He had a great Amazon like action comedy called Jean-Claude Van Johnson, which I loved. But that's like 10 years ago. But look, I think if you give JCVD a swing at one of these big fish, he'll deliver.
Oh, man.
Hey, in an era that is starved for movie stars, I think you're right. I think it's time to ascend. I always think, like, if Patrick Swayze would have lived, you know, the career he would have right now would be insane.
He'd be in Tarantino movies.
Oh, God, he'd be great in those.
When the guy in the chair inevitably becomes a movie, gotta give Jean-Claude Van Damme a starring role.
You do. You do. And, you know, we started off talking about this comic. I do want to impress on everybody. I've only read the first issue. I can't wait to keep reading it.
Thanks.
How great it is.
Thank
you. It's something I do hope it gets optioned and we get to see it adapted. But just in terms of, like, appreciate the comic for what it is, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I couldn't put it down.
Well, that's the dream, is just to be in the community as somebody who's been a fan and a part of it for so long, to now have a book and get to go to the shop and see something that Hannah and I wrote together is a really cool feeling. If it moves to another chapter, obviously, like, business wise, hey, hell yeah. But the dream wasn't that.
No,
the
it's
dream
to
is
have
to
the book,
turn pages and see, you know, what new video games are out in the on the back page, you know.
So cool.
Read the ads.
So it's really with fun. That, The Guy in the Chair number one is on sale October 8th. Pick it up at your local comic shop, and Ghost Season 5 premieres on October 16th. So pick up your comic, read the comic, and then take a selfie when you're watching the premiere episode of Ghost Season 5 with Ukash.
Yeah. That's a really good idea. I will, honestly, like, if you do that and send it to me, I will repost every single one of those.
I'm going
to
do it now.
Screen Crush will do so. We got it. Done.
I'm such a huge fan of both of yours. It's so cool to chat with you, Ryan and Heather. It's nice to see you again. And I can't wait to share with people what we have cooking.
You know, this, I have a feeling this isn't going to be the last time you're on the show with us. So
let's do it.
I hope not. Awesome. It's been great.
Well, say hi to Doug. I freaking love you, Doug.
Thank you so much.
I will. He'll be here full time next time. I'll have him.
Okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah, thanks. Well, Heather, thank you for a great time. Ukash, thank you.
Yeah, Ryan, thank you. This has been a Screen Crush Crossover Universe. Smash that bell, subscribe, and let us know who you want on the podcast in the comments.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.